It's been great educating families and being able to rescue families and just help them plan, because if you don't plan, then you're planning to fail. So this is what I've been working on currently, and just helping a lot of families protect themselves, because people don't usually think about days when something might happen to you. Like, if you were to stop working today, what plan do you have in place? Do you have an income that will replace what you have? Or how do you protect your family? Because if you don't, that's when people find themselves homeless, losing property, losing homes, losing cars, because you can't afford to pay for that if you were to get sick. So it's just so many ways you can plan for your child to go to college, so many things, index strategies.
This is Assorted Immigrant Stories podcast. My name is Zenith Mwangahamambamalao, and I am your host. And for those of you that are stopping by for the very first time, this is a podcast about immigrant journeys, the things I and others wish we knew. We have interviews and share conversations with immigrants from diverse backgrounds and countries as they share their own immigration stories. We explore struggles, triumphs, and cultural adjustments. We discuss identity, belonging, and community. And we also highlight successes and contributions to both American society and back home, and that's wherever home might be. We also review some books that touch on the immigrant story. So don't forget to rate and review, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from. Welcome, everyone. On today's episode, we have Precious Mwelwa Kajoba, and she will grace us with her coming to America story. Precious, say hi to everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you and welcome. I am so honored to have you here. I know it's been a hard time just trying to get a date. She's a very, very busy person, and we will get into that. We will hear about how she came, the kind of visa that she came on, how much it cost her, and what she's working on right now. And that's to do with life insurance. Okay, Precious. So tell us a little bit about your childhood.
So I was born in Kitwe, Zambia, and I spent half of my childhood there, and then I moved to Muflira, and the rest of my primary school was done there before I went to Fatima Girls. And my childhood was pretty interesting. How do you even summarize your childhood? I am the fifth child out of five children. Though we lived with relatives, so it was never a time where I felt like I was the last child, because we always had people my parents were taking care of, people younger than me. So it was always nice, and it was such a great lesson to us as children to know that it's always good to help and always just, you know, take care of people. And it just brings a level of satisfaction to know that you're helping other people and learning to live with other people. I think there was always so many of us in the house, and I think it helped with social skills, whether we liked it or not. You know, we had to learn, and I think that has played a big role when I look back now. So that was my childhood. Yes, I went to Fatima Girls, and then that was interesting too, because now I had to learn to be independent while there, because you're away from home for 3 months, come home for like a month, go back for 3 months. So it's like out of the year, you're home for 3 months and spending 9 months at a boarding school. So it was interesting. And now there comes some more social skills, because you have to live with other people that you don't know, that you've never lived with. And so it was good, because I think Fatima was another place that prepares you for the future, because now you have to learn to manage everything from food, trying to make sure you don't run out of food, trying to make sure you don't run out of money, and nobody's really telling you study. So you have to like just make sure you do it yourself. So my childhood was very interesting. We played a lot when I was younger too. We played outside a lot, which a lot of kids now are missing out on. We played outside, like get dirty playing outside. And then definitely you have to take a bath, a shower when you get home or when you get inside the house. So very interesting childhood.
I actually went to Fatima as well, secondary school. And I actually don't like the idea of boarding school to this date. I don't think I'd put my son in boarding school. When I think of what you said of being at home for 3 months out of a year, like I can't even imagine that. I know our parents were doing their best. That's what it was in that time, and people still are, and I just don't agree with it anymore.
And trust and believe, I'm the only child that went to boarding school, and because it was my choice. But then when I got there, I was thinking, what was I thinking? Why would I come here? And I used to be so sad, like days before going back to school, and that will continue into like 2 weeks after being there until after like the 10th grade. That's when like I think I kind of said, you know, we're almost there, we're gonna make it. But really it was tough being away. But I know my parents were very hardworking too. My dad was working in the mines and also doing business on the side, and had a great company, which, you know, which is still running to this day. My mom always has been a businesswoman and just making sure the family's taken care of. So they supported that. I said I wanted to go to boarding school. I didn't know what I was signing up for.
I know in that time it was like, okay, if you did well, this is how your child will study. But for someone like me, once I went to boarding school, then I felt like there was no one really to push me to study the way I should have. Even though I saw other people pushing themselves, I just couldn't. That came to me later in my life. So, and I did have an opportunity to leave, I think, in 11th grade. And that's a story for another day. And I should have, I did not, and I stayed in school. And then, but because my dad passed away right after, not really right after high school, but maybe 2 years after, I always look back at that time and think, I should have been home. That could have just been more time, like with at home with my brothers and my dad, because that time was somehow just lost. And I think that's why I can't see past taking my child, you know, or nephew or whatever, to boarding school. Nice childhood. And I liked about the living with other people, because I think it was like that for most families. I remember our neighbors, I think it was always like that. And there was always enough kids to play with. So did you have any particular favorite game?
Whoa. It's a long list. It's such a long list. From first of all, I remember when I was still much, much younger, my dad had come to America in the 90s. Early 90s, my dad had come to America, excuse me. And when he came back with like badminton and discs and just like some American games. So I remember him teaching us how to play badminton. And I was still very young, but they set everything up and I learned how to play then. And not knowing, at some point in high school, when I was at Fatima Girls, I had to go and represent the whole Copper Belt, you know, badminton tournament, which happened in Kabwe. Time I was in 11th grade. And everybody at home was just excited because this was just the, you know, backyard kind of game that we were all playing, just having fun, not knowing it all, you know. Even though I didn't win, I came out second place, but wow. It's just the memory that I hold on to, that, you know, you never know. You learn something today, but then it'll be used in the future. Right. And then speaking of games, we played games like what they call dodgeball here. In Zambia, we call it Sports. Interesting games. You would play that for hours. It didn't matter whether you were playing it on the grass, you were playing it in sand. We were just having a good time. The other one, I don't even think they have it here, what we called rounders.
No, it's like baseball, but it's not, you know. Yeah. Something like that.
It was so much fun. It was just so much fun with kids from the neighborhood. We played hopscotch. What do they call Waida? Like, what's Waida here? You know?
Don't know what it's escape. I don't know what it's called, but I've seen it. I've seen it, like I've seen it in the old movies, African American neighborhoods, especially. I've seen them do something similar to Waida. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We had so much to do, so many experiments growing up. Childhood was spent outside. The only time we wanted to come inside was come and have lunch. And then after lunch, we're back outside. Next time, it's almost 5 p.m. Okay, now we can go inside. And that's by people in the house calling you, come back in the house. It's time for your shower, for you to get ready. TV is about to come on, because back then TV only used to come on at 5 p.m. Right. And so we can watch the cartoons before the news came on.
Right.
Yeah, that was pretty much my childhood, but very interesting. I enjoyed playing outside. Played outside a lot.
Absolutely wonderful. So what I forgot to mention, ladies and gentlemen, is that Precious is from Zambia, just like me. So I didn't ask her to say which country she is from, but she just mentioned it not too long ago. So I'm sure some of you caught on to that. So Precious, you did say your dad came here, you know, and got some badminton stuff. Was that the first time the idea of coming to America came to you?
No, it wasn't, because I was very young at the time, but I think because he came for work and he stayed, I think, for 6 months or so. I was young. I don't even remember. I just remember, dad's back. We received clothes, toys, and everything. But he came for work. And I think for him, that's when I think the idea was planted in his mind that he wanted his children to come and experience what he had experienced here. And that was back in the 90s. Yeah. So for me at the time, no, I'm just young, just trying to enjoy life, enjoy my family. Yeah. No, that wasn't the time.
Okay. So when did it come to you? When was the first time the idea of coming to America come to you?
So the idea came about much, much later. I was already at Fatima Girls. I even remember my friend and I, we were in 10th grade, actually. By then, my brother had already come to America. So I was like, I think it would be a nice idea. My friend and I were sitting at the desk, my friend Mofia. So we were sitting at the desk and we were going through this book that had like universities and colleges in Canada and then the US. And I was like, wouldn't be a bad idea. So from that moment, I remember I was in 10th grade and you know, the classes were downstairs. I remember where I was seated and I was like, that's it. I have to go to America. I'm writing a letter and sending it to my brother to tell him I want to come to America. That's it. I think my mind was set and I had a goal in place. So I wrote him a letter. And by the time I was done with school, when my friends were going out, I would actually escort some of my friends to go and look for schools. Oh, CBU this. No, I'm not even thinking about that. My mind was already out in America. I'm going to America.
Okay.
So my brother helped with the application process.
Okay.
Over in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. And
okay. So before you came, did you have like, because I think that was right around the time the internet was transitioning. Like, you know, we had to go to the internet cafe. At the time you were trying to apply, were you still going to the internet cafe, or was it now the way it is that, you know, the internet is on your phone? What was it like for you?
You know, my husband and I just had that conversation at the airport this past weekend, where, because I came in before, we didn't even have cell phones. So I was just thinking, oh my goodness. Because when I arrived in the Atlanta airport, I didn't even have a phone and I was so, so young. And I still managed to get around. There were no cell phones like they are today. Internet wasn't like it is today. You had to go to the internet cafe.
Okay.
I was blessed because dad was doing most of the stuff for me. And yeah, the family was hands-on when it came to my application. So it made it seem easier. Right. Let me put it like that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that helps a lot because you already had somebody here on the ground, you know, yes. who already sort of understood, even though you may not have understood entirely what yes. things would be like, but at least there was somebody here to do those things for you. Because I always tell people that's one of the things you should do. Try and do your research, figure out the city where you go, try and find somebody there so that they can help you Absolutely. Find accommodation. Because those are the things, like when you don't know, you're sort of just jumping in here and it's, you're just jumping into fire. You're like, wait, what?
Yes. You're like, I'm going back next week. That's it.
So he applied for you at a school. Do you remember the school that you went to?
Yeah. Yes, okay. I do. I remember CCBC.
Okay.
Community College of Baltimore County, which was very close to where he lived at the time. It was a walking distance if you didn't have a car. It was very close. So, yeah, very, very close.
So that means you got an F1 student visa.
Correct.
All right. So do you remember how much it cost you to get all that?
I wouldn't put everything together to remember exactly what it was. I remember the visa application, I think at the time was about maybe
$100. Okay.
But right now I couldn't tell you the exact amount, but maybe we can try and see what it's costing now.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just curious to see how much it cost then. Okay. But I want to know, when you were applying for school, in your mind, what were you thinking you're coming here to study on that application paper? What did you put down?
Let me see. I think it was like biomedical.
So what was that your
I'm
dream?
So sorry. This is like over 20 years, so I'm trying to...
I know it's a lot, but what did you want to study? Like when you were in high school, for you, what were you thinking? Even when the idea of coming to America was there in your mind, what were you thinking? I'm going to America and I'm going to study X.
Okay, so when I was in high school, I was thinking, you know, I think it was more to do with the medical, but not what I ended up doing. Yeah, like you know, admin side of medicine, or if not, like maybe I'll just go and become a doctor or something. But
okay, right?
Because my grandparents, my auntie, they were in the medical field. So and I think I just had the passion still, you know, like even though it ended up being what it was, so it still worked out.
Yes, because one of the things I learned, obviously, like after I got here, I was like, oh my God, there's so much more you can do that I did not know. For example, I knew like general stuff. But when yes. I got here, even as I was transferring from the university to community college, even at the community college, there were so many other courses I'd never heard of.
Like so many. They have a book. Anyway, then they had a book with the list from A to Z, what you can study.
Right.
I was blown away. I was like, okay, so how do you even pick?
Right.
But the good thing is that they'll have like financial advisors for you. But yes, there's just so much more. And you'll be surprised. Like, this is just a community college. How does it have all these things that you can study? So, yeah.
Okay, so you come here, you're going to Community College of Baltimore County. So you did find your brother, but were there still, what challenges did you have still, you know, with transitioning and going to school and trying to maintain F1 status, which is maintaining the 12 credits every semester and still keeping up with the payments? How was that?
I would tell you, it's only by God's grace that, you know, I even made it through. First of all, you said coming here, so many things were different from home. Remember, I'm just coming out of boarding school. I didn't stay for a year at home. As soon as I came out, the following year, by September, I was already here in America. And as soon as I got here, I was actually like a week late for school. Okay. So I had to now like hurry up and get caught up. So first of all, to begin with, the date here was written different from the way we write at home. Some of the words are spelled different. The food is not the same as home. It was just so much that was different coming into America that I think you don't really think about. You're just excited that I'm going to America. But when you get here, and then the fact that you're so, so far away from home, there were days I would dream, I wish I could just like drive to Zambia and see my family. It was just a lot. I remember I was like, I think I'll go back because I had a return ticket. Nope. My parents were like, no, you're not coming back now. You're there for school. So it was a lot of things that were different. The food here tasted different. And you're just missing that taste of some of the foods that you were used to eating at home. Right. It was just a lot. Even getting into the car, the driver sits on the opposite side. So driving on the opposite side. So it was just a lot. From the moment I was picked up from the airport, I remember I didn't have a cell phone. So mm-hmm. my brother and I kept missing each other because he was like, when you get to the airport, don't just be standing in one place looking lost. So make sure you move around. Let me tell you, we kept missing each other and they kept announcing. For me to meet him somewhere, it was just something else. So I thank God for cell phones now because that was an experience. But I was like, yeah, I'm just going to try and fit in because I know I'm young. I don't want anybody to take advantage of me because I'm like so young, just standing there and I don't even know anybody or right. where to go. Or I can't even call anyone. I don't have a phone. So,
right.
Yeah, so...
So yeah. At what point did you realize, wait a minute, I'm paying three times more than the local in-state people are paying? Because you're at CCBC. I remember I had considered it, but it was a little bit more expensive than the community college I went to.
I didn't answer that question. I remember, first of all, I was like, whoa, this is how much we have to pay. And you know, when you first get here, you're converting every dollar to kwacha, right? Mm-hmm. Kwacha, which is, you know, the Zambian currency. So you're converting every dollar and you're just like, wow. So when I started talking to like my brother's friends and some other international students that, you know, I started meeting at the school, then I realized, my God, some people are here not even paying a dime and I'm paying this much money. Right. That means I was almost like paying for some of the students because of how much I had to pay.
Right.
And it wasn't easy to like try and keep up with all the payments because the semester just ended and you're like, oh my God, we have to get ready to pay for the next semester, you know? And you, at the same time, you're trying to make your grades because you have to keep up with your grades and you have to have nothing less than 12 credits.
Right.
So which came to like, sometimes three classes, but mostly four classes. Mm-hmm. Four classes for you to maintain your status. You always needed to have 12 credits and above. So sometimes a class might have 3 credits, 2 credits, 4 credits, which was rare for 4 credits, but yeah, sometimes.
So what she's describing, when you're on an F1 student visa, you are required to maintain 12 credits every semester. Otherwise, if you don't, you will go out of status. And if you go out of status, it means you become illegal. And you know, the school could report you to immigration and it can go left really quickly. But it just becomes difficult because it's expensive to pay for that 12 credits. And I know some schools do have a system where, well, if you pay 12 credits, between 12 and 17, we won't charge you extra. So you can take on extra classes if you wish. You know, so sometimes international students do take advantage of that, except it's a lot of work when you have those classes because okay. every class is giving you so many assignments. And then you do get to a point where you do have to work. And, you know, for time, and it just becomes hard to balance. So did you ever get to that point for you where you're like, okay, I need to work to supplement this?
Yes, at the school.
Okay.
So I started working in the international student office. So I would help out students that were coming in. It was interesting. And I was so grateful that they gave me that position because I was in the office with, you know, the other F1 advisor that was at the community college, Miss Karen McKinney.
Okay.
And the other one who was great was Sidi Tandia at CCBC. He was so, so great.
I think I remember, was he from Sudan or something?
Something like that. He was from West Africa, but he was always, always helpful. And I think he was just like encouraging us to just, you know, keep pushing, you know, like, yeah. I wish I can see him again because he was so great. He played a big role. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the F1 students' lives.
Right, right. Another important thing to note, when you're an F1 visa, you are not allowed to work off campus. You can only work on campus and 20 hours a week during the semester. And then only during the holidays, you can push to 40 hours. So
that's right.
It can be challenging to what she was saying. Like before you come, sometimes you have some perceptions. You think, you know, because you really don't understand those details. For me, at least, I didn't understand those details until I got here. I didn't know that my visa had those limitations. So I was imagining how I would come here and I would work as a nanny and I would make this $300-$400 a week that I was hearing people were making. And then when I got here, when I first found that out, I was like, wait, what? I'm in trouble.
And so now at that point, you're just trying to protect your status.
Right.
So you can finish your school, you know, so it's tough. It's tough. And then at the same time, you're trying to make good grades because if you don't, that becomes a problem too.
Right.
So you had to make sure your grades were good too.
Right. Just to maintain that.
Maintaining your status so that your I-20 can be kept current.
Right. So in that during time frame when you're at CCBC, were you ever able to go home that time, or was it just like, you know what, it's too expensive, let me just stay and graduate?
At some point I was like, I miss everybody, you know, but my dad was like, no baby, just stay.
Right, right.
Just stay, you'll see us. The time will come and you'll see us. So
Yeah.
That was good that he said that too, because I was ready any day. If he had said, come
I know,
on, I'm that flight and gone. So, but he was like, no,
yeah,
mommy, just stay.
Yeah,
because it's fine. We're fine. We're talking on the phone. So, and at the time we were using phone cards. It's not like now where we have WhatsApp. So you have to buy the phone card and it only had like 25 minutes, sometimes just 15 minutes and sometimes an hour, but you'll be calling and sometimes the minutes are running and you didn't even get through. So you're losing time to speak with your family. So yeah, that's how it was back then.
Things have really changed thanks to WhatsApp and technology and Facebook and all these other ways that you can communicate. Because truly, that whole phone card era, and in the winter when it was cold, that was a headache. That was a headache.
That was another thing too, the snow. And then how cold winters, you know, in Maryland are. I won't say that for California. California was different. But Maryland winters are brutal.
So no.
I had to. And remember, I came in September and we were getting close to the winter. So when the winter came, I was like, this is not the winter that I know from Zambia. This is something else.
You know what? Anyway, maybe because, like you said, you were coming straight from Zambia. I went to Michigan. So to me, Maryland was heaven. I was like,
really?
Yes. That winter, let me tell you, I was so cold.
Thanks all for the morning. I'm not going to Michigan then.
All the way to my bones, I was like, I can't do this. Cannot.
You're almost feeling depressed just because of the
cold. I actually was.
I just feel the sun on my skin, you know.
Yeah, it really was because it's that plus all the other problems that you're going through, because now you're discovering, oh my God, I can't afford to stay here. I just can't work on campus. I just, you know, you're realizing so many things, and then it's cold on top of that. It was depressing.
You reminded me of the cold. Oh, yes.
It really, really was depressing. So tell me, at some point you were also going, as you were going to school, so what did you transition to? Because you eventually you became a nurse, right?
So when I first came, like I was telling you, there was such a long list of everything that needs to be done. So at the time, the advisors just said, you know, let's put you in general studies. So that's what I went into. So I did that for almost 4 years, but I was intentional about the prerequisites that I was taking, even with that major in place. Anyway, fast forward, I graduated, and then I was applying to nursing school at the community college and the waiting list. The waiting list. So that's another thing. And while you're on the waiting list, it doesn't matter. You still have to be in status, meaning you still have to go to school.
Right.
Though after I graduated, if I wanted, there's a year that they give you that, you know.
OPT.
OPT, yes. But I said, you know what? Let me just continue. So I found a school in D.C., at the University of the District of Columbia. So I was like, cool. A friend of mine had already taken classes there for LVN. And she said, oh, this is going to take me 1 year and I'll be done. But they also have an evening program, which you can finish in like 15 months. So I was like, why not?
Okay.
But then remember, I'm an F1. So I have to jump through some hoops. So the 1 year is what I made sure I used to continue going to school in DC. And their worry there was, how are you going to pay? Are you going to make sure you pay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's going to support you? So I had to provide documentation again and just give them my word and with supporting documents that it's going to, you know, I'm going to pay for the whole, what's this? Time that I'm there, and I'll finish paying by the time we graduate. And that worked out. I mean, it wasn't easy. Imagine driving to DC from Baltimore every day. The only thing I was happy about was that it was an evening program, so I had a few extra months.
Okay.
And we saw how many people dropped out by the time we were finishing this LVN school. But I was so proud of myself when the time came.
Okay.
And we were done. So, at the University of District of Columbia, because I was like, I don't want to wait and be kept on the waiting list here at CCBC. You know, Dundalk, because the CCBC had three locations.
Right.
Even at the other location where they just did specifically LVN, they still didn't have room. At the main campus, they didn't have room. So I just went to DC and it worked out because after that, I was able to.
Were you still, so when the 1 year that you used to go to UDC, was that the 1 year after you graduated general studies and then you're given that 1 year gap, like the OPT off? Is that what you used to go to UDC?
Yes, that's what I used to go to UDC. And when the time came where I was done, I still went back to school. And this time, I went to the community college that's in the city.
Baltimore City BCC. Community College, yes, because that's where I went.
Okay. So I went there. And
just to maintain status.
Thank you. Even though I've graduated.
Correct. I know exactly. And because it costs you so much money because all you're doing is paying up, taking credit. I mean, I took some crazy classes. You have no idea.
I even ended up doing sign language. I took classes that I would never have imagined. But then they was like, wow, that was interesting to learn too. Like, you know, music classes.
Did that too.
Swimming.
I did tennis, music, fitness,
you
and health.
You have to be mentally strong.
Right.
Just say, you know, we're going to make it and you keep pushing.
Okay. So Let me just explain a little bit. The OPT is something you get after you get an associate's degree. You get what they call the optional practical training, and it's sort of like a work visa that you get from immigration. It allows you to train in whatever you studied, but you could potentially get a job anywhere with that. Mm-hmm. And then now, when you went to UDC, they took you under what? Like for them, what was it? Or for them, it didn't matter. Like you're just doing the LVN. LVN is licensed vocational nursing, right? It's like LPN, yes, licensed practical nursing.
Sorry, so vocational, they use that in California. So I've just been used to that. But in Maryland, it's practical. Licensed practical nursing. LPN.
LPN.
So when I moved to California, it's LVN. So it's right. Licensed vocational. Yes.
Yes. So at UDC, what was it under? Like, was it under, did you have to go to the International Student Office? Or like, what was it? Was it F1? Like, what was it that you did that under at UDC?
At UDC, it was just under nursing.
Okay.
And it was under nursing. But then when they run everything, I had to show them that my I-20 was current.
And okay.
I just, you know, so I made sure every time.
Okay.
You know, and working closely to Mr. Tandia, the same man that I was talking to about, Karen McKinney, would always make sure our eyes were current.
Okay. Okay.
When I say we, I had some other Zambian
students.
Around that we, you know, some of them we lived with them and some we just met on campus, but you had to make sure your I-20 was always current. So that helped me. And then showing proof that I'll be able to pay bank statements, you know. Okay, so yeah. And then, but I was lucky there was an installment plan given in UDC. So that allowed me. And at the time, the total cost was less than 10,000. And
okay.
I praise God because I know with inflation now, that's not the case. I know it's way over that, over 10,000 by now. Yeah, that's what they did. Just my documents supported me and they allowed me. Otherwise, they were not going to allow me. I had to speak with the director and explain everything.
That's one of the things people do because it really does do, it does take a year. You can go, it can be $10,000. You have a payment plan. I don't know how much it is today, but I know there was a time it was around $10,000 for the whole program. And you can go for a year and you can become a licensed practical nurse and you can quickly get, they always needed. People are always looking for LPNs. But one of the things I also discovered is that actually you can get what is called an M1 visa if you want to come and study something like LPN, because these are like non-academic programs, but what you end up with at the end is like some sort of certificate. So there are programs under that you can get, and LVN/LPN is one of those. It's called an M1 visa. It's similar to F1, but it's not, because it's shorter and you can only work at the end. But that's an option for people out there. If you're listening and you're just interested and you just want to come and study for a year, for 6 months, you know, maybe you just want to come and do photography, carpentry, or any one of those things, you can get an M1 visa for that kind of thing.
Let me just add on to that for the M1 visa. Mm-hmm. So you also have to make sure, you know, you've been accepted in a place, like in a school or whatever certificate you want to get. So it's similar to F1. The documents that you receive might just be a little different for you to take to the embassy for your interview, but you have to make sure you already have a school, that you've been accepted before you can even start applying at the embassy, even though you're just coming for that certificate, just like the F1. You have to be accepted, your I-20 sent, your service forms, you know, all everything that is required, you know, before you can do the DS-160.
Okay. So tell us, how did you find yourself in California? And did you work there as a nurse as well?
Yes. So in 2014, I got married to my husband, Mr. Sam Menakajoba. So he was living in California. So I relocated to California. And while there, yes, I was working in different settings. I've worked in different settings and it's been interesting to see all the areas of nursing that you can work in, from group home to working at school, working in a clinic, you know, and now case management. And it's just been interesting. And just being able to help patients has been great. I didn't even know I would enjoy it as much as I have. When I first started doing nursing, I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I have. Yeah.
We're beginning to wind down now. So tell me, what thoughts do you have for somebody who's thinking about coming for school, for example? What advice would you give?
Go for it. I came here when I was very young. And even though some days were tough, still had good days. And I've learned so much. This exposure has just brought so much to my life too. And don't hesitate. Go for it. Just make sure you have all the requirements in place. Make sure you get all your documents that you need, your I-20s, your school application, and that you've been accepted at the school, your banking information, because those are some of the things that are important. And also make sure you prepare well for your visa interview. Just be calm and collected when you go there, and everything is going to work out for you. And when you come, don't feel like you're all alone. Look around, look for people that you can connect with, people that can help you out on your journey when you get here, and everything is going to fall in place. Do not be afraid. It's been a wonderful journey, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I would still do it again. And I just want to say thank you to my parents that helped me get to this place, and my brother too. So thank you for this chance to speak to your audience. And if they have any questions, they can always DM me. We've given them the handles.
Okay. So tell us, currently, what are you working on right now?
So I got a licensed financial professional out of the state of California. So the state gave me that license to practice, to educate families on how to strategize for their retirement, income protection, you know, college planning for kids. And just, you know, I think I mentioned just index strategies. So, and it's something that a lot of people here in America don't know about. And when I found out that information, I was very, very interested, and I just couldn't wait to learn more. That's why I went ahead and got the license. And so it's been great educating families and being able to rescue families and just help them plan. Because if you don't plan, then you're planning to fail. So this is what I've been working on currently, and just helping a lot of families protect themselves, because people don't usually think about days when something might happen to you. Like if you were to stop working today, what plan do you have in place? Do you have an income that will replace what you have? Or how do you protect your family? Because if you don't, that's when people find themselves homeless, losing property, losing homes, losing cars, because you can't afford to pay for that if you were to get sick. So it's just so many ways you can plan for your child to go to college, so many things, index strategies. So it's just a lot. That's just the summary of the things that we're working on.
Now, oh no, that's really, really interesting, because I think as the diaspora, when we come, for example, this is the kind of information that either you don't understand or you don't know. So then you don't sign up for these things until a life-changing event happens to you. And then you realize, so, you know, I needed this kind of thing. So can you just expand a little bit? How do you, are you just talking generally to everybody, or are you targeting the diaspora?
I think right now, I mean, even if you're in Zambia or any other country, I think it's always good to just plan ahead and find out what things are there in place. But for what I'm doing currently, yes, not only international students can qualify for these accounts, it's everybody in general that can benefit from this. And you'll be surprised, you know, we're teaching probate code and how you can bypass that and things like that. So it's just a lot of information that we're trying to bring to families that sometimes people have never even heard of this right. information. Just like I didn't even get to hear some of this information until last year. And that's why I said, okay, I'm joining this crusade so we can teach families so that no family will be left behind. Right. And we make sure we protect families because it's very, very important. Because like you said, people don't think about it until you're already in the situation and now you're thinking, what are we going to do now?
Right. So, right. Okay. So, and part of what she's saying is like universal index life insurance. Did I say that right?
Yes, the universal life index life insurance.
Universal life, yeah. So it is very important to have, and truly we don't think about those things. For me, I even bypassed having health insurance. I thought it was just a thing. I'm young, you know, and I'm going to school and I'm trying to save all the coins, right? So because I'm thinking, man, I have to pay another $50 out of my paycheck just to pay for health insurance. But it is important to have that. Same thing with the life insurance. It is important that we do sign up and get life insurance to protect our families and those that may be left behind if something happens to us or even just when you're sick. And another thing I will point out, the longer you wait, the harder it becomes. And I will give my own example. I had brain surgery when I had my son. And then obviously a lot of things came to light to me and a lot of realizations. And I realized I needed to put a lot of things in place. And life insurance was one of those things. Yes, I have life insurance through the job, but it only pays up to the amount of like your yearly income or something like that. And you do need something better than that and something to protect you when you're sick. And when I was putting in my application for that, because I had brain surgery, that meant that I couldn't qualify for some stuff because it's like I'm already at risk.
Right.
So I would encourage people out there that when you're thinking you're young and you're working and nothing is going on with you, make sure you have your life insurance. Protect yourself so that when something happens to you, you're covered. Your family is covered. Or even when you're sick, you're covered. Your family is covered. Because
everybody's covered.
Everybody's covered. I was on disability for almost a year. I was lucky I had great benefits. But what about for somebody who doesn't have that? So you need to be covered. So very important. So where can people find you if they want this information? How can people reach you?
So my email, my phone number, I'm on Instagram too. I'm on Facebook. I'm on TikTok as well, so you can find me. But before I forget, I wanted to say this. You mentioned you have a son. So it doesn't, as long as your child is 2 weeks old, we can start this account for them. And there's so much information that we can explain to you. It doesn't matter. And even for you as an individual, you can get even more than one account. You're not restricted to one account. And the sooner you get it, the better. Just like she explained, the waiting game is a losing game because nobody knows what tomorrow can bring. So it's better to protect yourself today because people are always saying when something happens, the first thing people are going to ask, oh, were they protected? Did they have life insurance? But when you still have the opportunity to protect yourself, people don't even want to talk about it. People are running. Oh, I'm going to die. No, there's so many different types of life insurance, and you just have to get with the right person so they can explain to you for you to get what matches you and what you need and will work for you. So thank you so much for this opportunity. Let me tell you, my Instagram handle is precious.mwelwa, and I think you'll be able to see me and you can DM me there. My email address is preciousmwelwa2002. That's the year I got my email, 2002@yahoo.com. And let me see my Facebook. I think if you just type in Precious Mwelwa Kajoba, I will come up on Facebook. And then on TikTok, I'm trying to remember. So yeah, just DM me and I'll be able to schedule an appointment and I'll sit down with you and I can break everything down with you. And then you can also join the crusade so that there's more of us that will educate families, because the wealthy and the informed are teaching this and have been practicing this, including the banks are practicing this. So please don't be left behind.
Right.
Do not be left behind.
Okay. All right. Well, before we say our...
Sorry. My TikTok is @1_preciouslife. Thank you.
All right. That's everything. All right. Okay. So before we say our goodbyes, we are just curious. I am curious. So tell me, I know you said you struggled with food when you came. It was just tasting somehow. Tell me, what is something that you discovered here? You were like, oh, I can eat this and it reminds me of home. And where did you get it from?
So let me tell you, when I first came, actually, the first few days, whatever I ate made me sick. Until we found cornmeal and I ate in Shima. I mean, the cornmeal is a little different from the cornmeal back home, but that was the closest thing to Five Finger. So that was very, very interesting. And then going to the African stores, They had this little kind of, it was like a smoked chicken kind of thing.
Mm. Those tiny chickens they sell.
Yes. So that was like, okay, this is really good. And then even though it was spicy, so we'd have to rinse it like 2-3 times.
Right.
And then what else? Just making sure whatever African foods that we could find and the vegetables, we ate. But I'm telling you, we still couldn't find the pumpkin leaves that we're used to eating. You know, cassava leaves here are different. They're so like powdery compared to the way we have them at home, but still just that flavor. So
I agree with you. Let me tell you, West Africans have this down packed. I remember when we moved to Baltimore and the Africans, I mean, they have all their food in there, you know, all the West African food you can think of. I was like, wow. But it took us a while to discover all those H-Mart, the Asian stores as well, like the Korean stores.
Oh, yeah, the Asian stores too, yeah.
Because you can find like pumpkin leaves in there. You can find Wondwe, for example. You can find,
It took us a long time.
The Akapenta.
That's one thing that you don't even think about, that food will become an issue.
Right.
But it does.
It really does.
Food can make you shed a tear. I'm telling you, like just missing home. I remember how that tasted and you can't even get it.
Right.
On top of the struggles that we had, food was one of them. Missing food from home.
That's why when I'm traveling, you should see me when coming back.
I have a freezer filled with like dry foods. Yes. Anytime I'll get Kapenta out, eat some, you know, some, what's this? Just dry fish. Yeah.
Yeah.
We make sure. Even the cookies, what we call biscuits back home, we don't have eat some more here.
Nothing comes close.
Eating.
Yeah.
Nothing comes close. Tennis biscuit. Some of these things seem simple.
Yeah.
Hungry Lion. Like, which fries have come close to Hungry Lion?
Yeah.
So it's just some of those things. I'm telling you, it was a struggle when I first got here.
I hear you. I know it really has gotten better and there's a lot more places you can buy. Actually,
exactly.
There's now a Zambian store in Pittsburgh. I've forgotten the name, but yes, there is now a Zambian store in Pittsburgh. I will have it on one of the episodes. I will remember to mention it or give it a shout out. But yes, they're importing things from Zambia and selling. But we also have, I believe, somebody in DC who's also doing the same thing. Luvona, his Zed Chef, she's also now selling like the Zambian food. So she advertises on Facebook. So you can see like the dry food, fish, Kapenta, Inshonkonono, Ifingubala, you name it.
I'll try and look that up and hopefully they can, you know, mail everything to us that are far away now.
Or trying to figure out who's traveling. That's another way. Just get a suitcase. But like you, I'm even trying to get another deep freezer because the one I have is
already. I do. We had to. Mm-mm. The struggle was real in the beginning.
Yeah, it really was. No, Precious, Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I hope to have you again so we can go, you know, when you find out more information, please come and share with us, because we don't want to be left behind. We do want to be wealthy, and we do want to leave our children wealthy as well. All right, listeners, thank you for listening today. And until the next episode, it is goodbye, but don't forget to rate, like, share, and subscribe to wherever you get your podcast from.
Thank you so much.